Well, this morning brings me to the end of this series of borrowed sermon titles from Charles Dickens. I hope I haven't wearied you with this little exercise. It's been good for me, anyway, because these sermon titles, taken from works of literature, reflect feelings, ideas, responses that people have about life. This particular one is not very well known, actually. In fact, I think it's fair to say, in Dickens' own day, the battle of life wasn't particularly popular. That's probably why it wasn't on your literature curriculum in high school. It was a novella, which is not as long as a novel usually is, but longer than a short story. And interestingly, from our perspective, it was published in 1846, the very year this congregation traces its origin from. So that just puts it in a historical context for you. But as in the past, I'm not borrowing the ideas from Dickens' novella. I'm just taking the title, The Battle of Life. Life is a battle, you know. We are mortal creatures, and our circumstances are always at peril. From the moment you were conceived, that life that you have was at risk. Any number of events or circumstances could have ended it just like that. Of course, it's not just that life is mortal, because what Dickens was representing in his story was that life is a battle, it's a struggle. It's kind of never ending. I mean, as mortal creatures, we just wouldn't survive unless certain things happened. We live in a part of the world, for instance, where we wouldn't even survive a year without protection from the elements. We need food and nurture. Life's challenges seem sometimes to keep rolling up to meet us. And that struggle, that battle of life, takes different forms in different seasons of life, but it's always there. I was in a conversation in the past week when we were talking about the struggles that children and young people face as they grow up and make decisions about life. And how even in the earliest of years in a human life, there are struggles. I don't suppose the children would probably put the label Battle of Life on it, but it's real for them too. And then I was moved to remark, but you know, it doesn't change. The battle goes on. It's just that maybe the issues are a little different as you age. So we are people who have a struggle to live, a battle of life. In fact, you know, we talk about, we use that form of description If someone's suffering from a disease, we may say about them, they're battling for their life. And of course, not all of life's battles are anywhere near that dramatic. Most of them are those ongoing challenges that we struggle with, we think we've solved, and then they're back for us to deal with yet again. And so just our mere physical survival is a battle. And these things that we can say about our physical form, of course, also describe our spiritual journey. For our spiritual journey, which, interestingly enough, you know, in Christian terms, we describe in terms of birth and life, is also a struggle for us. And not everyone survives that spiritual struggle. All sorts of issues arise which can snuff out one's spiritual vitality and growth. Or people just reach a point where they don't deal with the spiritual side of their lives anymore. They just coast along. But I think that Dickens, in the choice of this title, reminds us that if our spiritual lives are to grow and flourish, just like our physical lives, then there are things we must do. There are efforts that we must make. There are preparations that we must take account of. And of course, you know, what's true for us individually in our spiritual growth is also true for us collectively together in the Christian church. This is not a particularly sort of dramatic era for the Christian church in this part of the world, in this generation. You know, we went through a time when it seemed as though the Christian church was just there and would always be there. It replenished itself just by natural generation. It didn't necessarily have a big struggle to stay alive and to stay healthy. And of course, that is a condition which doesn't always persist. And we're now at a time when, you know, Christian congregations in this part of the world are closing every week. And it certainly at least invites us to think about what's different, what's happening, and why. Of course, this is not unique. There have, if we look back over the history of the Christian church, there are all kinds of times and places when we could say, it's just not going to make it. It's not going to survive. It's going to be wiped out entirely. It's just going to disappear. But that didn't really happen. Sometimes it then went through a season of awakening when new vitality was experienced. And in those times and places when the church disappeared for a season, the reality was that somewhere else the faith was flourishing. And we've gone through those cycles, you know, in Christendom, quickly enough that we have experienced some of them in our own generation. You know, where the Christian church in one part of the world sent off missionaries to share the good news with people in other places. And now those other places are sending missionaries back to help a church which is struggling. So this struggle, this battle of life, is all around us. And we can either throw up our hands and say, well, that's just the way it is. Or we can say, Lord, what do we do now? Come to our rescue. I point you to the two scripture readings this morning. The one from Chronicles may have seemed to you a bit of a stretch. What has this got to do with what? You know, it's just a little page out of the history of Judah. King Hezekiah gets the word that his country is about to be overrun by a very powerful enemy. Now, Hezekiah was a man of faith. He trusted the Lord. But what he didn't do was say, Lord, I trust you, you take care of it. No. Hezekiah, as king, went out and gathered his people and said, "What? Here's what we need to do. Let's talk together about how we face these circumstances." And Jerusalem was dependent for its survival on water, as most places in that part of the world were. And so they realized that since in the case of Jerusalem, the springs from which the city got its drinking water were outside the walls of the city, they needed to do something to protect that. Because if an enemy came and encamped around them, the enemy would have the water and they would be parched. And so they fixed the springs so that the enemy couldn't benefit from them, and they provided for their own water supply into the city. And then they gathered the leaders of the people together under Hezekiah, and they armed themselves. They made weapons and spears, because it seemed pretty obvious that they were soon to be in battle. And then they began to work on their fortifications. They built up the walls around the city. They added more walls. The ancient fortress of Milo in the midst of Jerusalem was repaired, that it would be of use for defense in time of war. They did this, you see, knowing, at least under Hezekiah's leadership, knowing that the Lord could be trusted and that the Lord would care for them. There's an interesting line here, though, in the record in Chronicles. Concerning Hezekiah, it says, "In every work that he undertook in the service of the house of God, he did with all his heart, and he prospered." Hezekiah was not one to say, well, let's pray about it and forget about it because God will take care of it. He understood that he had a role, that the people had a role to play. Under the Lord's leadership and by his wisdom and strength, but there were things that they needed to do on their own behalf. And so he led them to do that. And he He did that as he also encouraged it. He gathered the leaders together in the square at the gate of the city and spoke encouraging to them, saying, "Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid or dismayed before the king of Assyria and all the horde that is with him. For there is one greater with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." Dickens had a pretty good line for the title of his novella, The Battle of Life. Because if we do not understand that life has this element about it, we are sure to falter. And balancing that lesson from 2 Chronicles concerning Hezekiah, there was that simple word from the Gospel of John, chapter 10, where Jesus spoke about the sheepfold. You know, where we have to sort of understand how that worked to get the significance of what he was saying. There were commonly used in shepherding in those times common sheepfolds that were shared by a number of shepherds and their flocks. And they would be an enclosure that protected the animals at night. They wouldn't be in such a place in all seasons of the year necessarily, but they would be, it was a shared place of refuge for the sheep at night, an enclosure that had a gate on it that could be closed, and a gatekeeper that would only admit those people who had a rightful reason to be there. And so the interesting reference to the fact that when a shepherd arrived to gather his sheep, he didn't have to go through the whole accumulated flocks of sheep in the sheepfold. He merely had to speak and call, and his sheep would recognize his voice and would follow him out. And each shepherd would come and do the same. And they would take their sheep to the place of pasture that they were using at that time. And Jesus used this analogy to refer to the care that the Lord gives to his people. But like a good flock, we need to recognize his voice. We need to follow. And Jesus said concerning this, to sum it all up, "I came that they may have life and have it more abundantly." So, when you sense in some moments that life is a battle, don't just decide the world's picking on you. It's part of our human condition. It's always there. Maybe we're in greater peril when we don't think about it, because it's still the reality in which we live. It relates to our physical survival. It relates to our spiritual survival. And of course, Jesus brought quite a new dimension to this, because Jesus expanded our understanding of life and detached it from the mere whatever, you know, 80 or add as many digits as you want, because it eventually comes to a conclusion, this physical life we live. I'm always astounded these days when I read the obituary pages and see how many people live to be 100. That seemed in my childhood almost unthinkable. But the reality is, our physical life ends. But Jesus introduced a new dimension, life everlasting. It's a dimension which humans often crave, but don't necessarily want to pay attention when someone wants to talk about it. They'd like to think it was true. What Jesus does is demonstrate that it can be true, as he himself demonstrated in his life, death, and resurrection. In public, for all to see, and this is the hope he bestows to the sheep of his flock. So hear his voice, follow where he calls you, and go where he leads. That's, along with using every gift that God has given to you, the way to fight the battle of life. Thanks be to God.